From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Our show guest starts this hour, and then afterwards we'll have open lines. That'll be the last hour of the program tonight. Now, you might remember back in March of 2004, I had a guest on the program by the name of David Booth. Remember David? Now, he is the one who accurately predicted that very horrible 1979 Chicago air disaster. As a matter of fact, he even called the FAA before it happened. It was a DC-10 that crashed. 271 people died. He was on the program with Wayne Green. That was back in March of 2004, where they were going to be talking about the secrets of Sister Lucia Fatima and that third secret and what she told David. Well, I ended up booting them off the program because they just wouldn't tell us what she told David, and that was the basis of the whole program. Well, years have gone by, and David has sent me a letter of apology that he would like me to read to you, which I will do tomorrow. And in so doing, I have accepted that letter of apology and the rationale behind it, and I shall read it in its entirety to you tomorrow. And then quite possibly we may have David back on the program. Well, in 3 years' time, General Motors Corporation has set a target for production of an all-electric car in 2010. The major uncertainty facing the Chevrolet Volt, a concept vehicle that GM unveiled in January, was whether the lithium-ion batteries can be developed to power economically and safely. A running Volt prototype is expected by the end of 2007, and General Motors would take the unusual step of opening much of its development process to the media. Now, you might remember that Alex Jones and I are trying to interview convicted murderer Terry Nichols of the Oklahoma City bombing case. We sent a letter to the warden, the U.S. Department of Justice of the Federal Bureau of Prisons. He's in Colorado. This is the letter we received. This is in response to your request dated February 22, 2007, to interview inmate Terry Nichols, number 08157-031, an inmate currently confined at the United States Penitentiary Administrative Maximum, Florence, Colorado. The Bureau of Prisons makes every effort to accommodate requests as long as the request does not negatively affect the security and operation of our institutions. Unfortunately, it has been determined that due to continued security concerns, granting your request at this time may disrupt the good order and security of this institution. Therefore, your request has been denied. And then he goes on to give us a contact number if we want to call to follow up on it, which we will do. But I do not see how my interview of Terry Nichols and with Alex aboard will disrupt the good order and security of the institution. I just don't see it. Well, following the very tragic earthquake in Indonesia that killed at least 70 people, now an Indonesian jetliner carrying 140 people has burst into flames as it landed at an airport on Java Island. To date, at least 49 people killed, scores injured. It was a Boeing 737 carrying 10 Australians, including journalists and diplomatic staff. The Indonesia jet started shaking violently before landing and then overshot the runway, hitting fences, slamming into a rice field. Some survivors said the fire began at the front of the plane before engulfing the aircraft. In Bedford, Indiana, now, I see these as a series of just very strange stories. The man whose small plane slammed into his former mother-in-law's house, killing him and his 8-year-old daughter, had apparently told his ex-wife before the crash that he had the girl and you're not going to get her. Eric Johnson, a student pilot who had soloed before, strapped daughter Emily into the passenger seat of a leased single-engine Cessna. Less than 2 hours later, officials say the plane smashed into the home of Vivian Pace, the girl's grandmother. In Bridgeport, Connecticut, a Connecticut man has been arrested for allegedly stabbing his wife several times, then giving the knife to his 2-year-old son, telling him to stab mommy. The boy did not stab his mother. In Erie, Pennsylvania, a woman pleaded guilty to swinging her 4-week-old son like a bat to hit her boyfriend, fracturing the infant's skull. She could get up to 20 years in jail for that. In Saudi Arabia, a 19-year-old Saudi woman who was kidnapped, beaten, and molested by seven men who then took photos of her and threatened to kill her. She has been sentenced under the country's Islamic-based law to 90 lashes for the crime of being alone with a man not related to her. Can you believe that? The woman is appealing to the Saudi King Abdullah to intervene in this very controversial case. A New York elementary school teacher is suing the Long Island school district there that fired her after alleging that she was teaching witchcraft to her students. Lauren Berrios is filing suit against the Hampton-based school district for $2 million and what her lawyer is dubbing the 21st century reenactment of the Salem witchcraft trials. A new study suggests that screening smokers and former smokers for lung cancer doesn't save lives or prevent advanced disease and may lead to unneeded and harmful treatment. Now, it's not the final word, they say, on CT scans. Some experts had hoped that the scans, which are a special kind of X-ray that can detect tiny lung abnormalities, will prevent lung cancer deaths by getting people into treatment earlier, but they say there hasn't been any convincing evidence of that. A large scientific study won't be completed for years without that evidence. Now the American Cancer Society does not recommend the test, which costs $300 to $400, and most insurance companies won't pay for it anyway. In a moment, the heir to the Baskin-Robbins fortune joins us, John Robbins, to talk about Healthy at 100. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. John Robbins is widely recognized as one of the world's leading experts on the dietary link with the environment and health. Now, his life and work have been featured in an hour-long PBS special titled Diet for a New America. John is the only son of the founder of the Baskin-Robbins ice cream empire. He was groomed to follow in his father's footsteps, chose to walk away from Baskin-Robbins and the immense wealth that it represented to pursue the deeper American dream. His dream of a society at peace with its conscience because it respects and lives in harmony with all life forms. A dream of a society that is truly healthy, practicing a wise and compassionate stewardship of a balanced ecosystem. John's life is dedicated now to creating an environmentally sustainable, spiritually fulfilling, socially just human presence on this planet. Admirable John Robbins, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good to have you with us. So you gave it all up. You could have been running the Baskin-Robbins empire.
Yes, and I walked away from it for a deeper American dream.
Well, we're going to talk about that tonight, too. That's fascinating. And, of course, I got to tell you, in growing up in Detroit and then St. Louis, I have taken my three children to Baskin-Robbins ice cream chains and stores. They love it. And it's been a great idea. It was started in, 1945 here in California?
Yes, it was. And I'm sure I've eaten more ice cream even in just my childhood than your daughters combined. But, ice cream is not a healthy thing in excess. My own uncle, Bert Baskin, my dad's partner and brother-in-law, died of a heart attack in his early 50s.
Oh, my.
And he was a big, big man.
Yeah.
And when it happened, I asked my dad, do you think there could be any connection between the amount of ice cream that he would eat and his fatal heart attack? And my father said no. His ticker just got tired and stopped working.
And
I looked in my dad's eyes and I saw denial. I could understand, though, why he wouldn't want to even consider the possibility there could be a link.
Yeah.
Because by that time, he had manufactured and sold more ice cream than any human being that had ever lived on this planet, and he didn't want to think, not for a moment, that it was hurting anybody.
Now, to this day, John, 5,600 locations around this planet?
Yes.
At least.
Yes.
And your father, how's he doing?
Well, he's in his very, very late 80s, and, about 15 years ago, he had diabetes and high blood pressure and a lot of problems that were, frankly, fairly predictable with a person who'd lived the kind of lifestyle he had. These are diseases of affluence. These are diseases of excess. And his doctor leveled with him and told him that he really ought to make some big changes if he wanted to live much longer. And he did, and he began to follow the advice of Dean Ornish and people like myself who've been writing about these things and talking about these things. And he had 15 good years after that.
Oh, that's good.
So, I'm, and in a way, I was able to give him something perhaps more meaningful and fulfilling than if I had followed in his footsteps, fulfilled his expectations, and taken over Baskin-Robbins, because I was able to take a stand for a different way of life that even he could benefit from to some degree in his later years.
Well, you know, there's something to be said about moderation, and I've got to tell you, just knowing what you've done and looking at your work, had you taken over Baskin-Robbins, you may have changed the company so much, I'm not sure it would have succeeded. Not to knock your business abilities, but I have a feeling you would have changed some things.
Well, you know, I would have had to stay in integrity there. But, you know, an ice cream cone isn't going to kill anybody. But the more you eat, the more likely you are to have a heart attack, like my uncle Bert Baskin died of. Or, you know, it's not just him. Ben Cohen, who was the founder and owner of Ben & Jerry.
Sure.
Had a quintuple bypass in his late 40s. You know, these are the chickens coming home to roost. This is what happens when you eat a high-fat, high-saturated fat diet and don't take care of yourself. And, you know, Ben Cohen's a terrific guy. My uncle was a terrific guy. I'm not meaning to discredit them in any way, but I think we can learn from what happens to people, and then we don't have to make all the mistakes ourselves.
How did you change, or when did you change, or were you always into the health mode?
Well, I was always a smart aleck, you know. I was always questioning everything and rebelling and challenging the assumptions and the beliefs around me. And I just didn't feel pulled in that direction. Although I grew up, you know, and we had an ice cream cone-shaped swimming pool in our backyard, and I loved it. I mean, I worked in the stores. I worked in the factories.
I mean, you probably never went without, I guess,
truly,
right?
I truly never went without. I had ice cream for breakfast some days.
Gosh.
It's terrible. But you know, sometimes excess is a teacher. And I had ice cream in excess. And I wasn't healthy. I didn't feel good. I wasn't strong. I wasn't fit. I had a lot of physical problems myself. I looked around my family. I saw everyone struggling with their weight and some people losing that struggle. And I just said, you know, I want to live a different way than this. And I don't think that the almighty dollar is everything. You know, there are other things in life. And that may sound heretical in today's society, but I felt like, you know, if there isn't anything deeper, more meaningful than money and the pursuit of it, then life isn't worth living. And I felt guided. I had an intuition. I had an inner instinct that was calling me away from that world of ice cream and money and into the pursuit of a whole different definition of success, really, about what makes a human life worthy. And instead of it being measured entirely by dollars and cents, I thought it might be measured in how much we can contribute to the well-being, to the joy, to the laughter, to the beauty of our fellow human beings and of the whole Earth community.
You know, my son called me a couple weeks ago, John. He's in St. Louis. I'm here in L.A. right now. He's 24 years old, just 24 and a half. And he says, Dad, my blood pressure's high.
Oh, my God.
And you know, he's not overweight. He's a kid.
Yeah.
And I said, well, we're going to get this taken care of right now. And so I'm doing the long-distance dad thing with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said, you know, go see your doctor. If you need this cardiologist or whatever, I've got some people that I know you can deal with right away. So he goes in, and John, you know, he's probably listening tonight going crazy because I'm revealing some of this. But, you know, if it'll help anybody, it's worth it, just like you're doing. 170 over 100.
That's really high.
It's ridiculously high. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So in he goes. They gave him a blood test. Everything there was fine. No abnormalities there. And now he's on a blood pressure pill. But I'm going back to St. Louis in a few weeks for a while for springtime. Springs in St. Louis are the best. And, you know, I'm also going to talk with him about some natural things that we can do for him, which he's not aware of. And I think that's a responsibility of a parent.
I do, too. And I think that as parents, we need to not feed our kids junk food, not to insinuate that you ever did with him. But a lot of us do as parents, you know, sort of turn our kids over to McDonald's. And we really need to take responsibility for creating an environment where young people can live healthy lives. And I don't know what the cause is of your son's high blood pressure.
And they don't either. That's the thing.
But I would certainly, you know, I don't know. Very often in Western medicine, there's the mentality of a pill for every ill. There's a problem.
Yeah.
You take a drug to suppress the symptom. And with blood pressure that high, blood pressure medication certainly might be needed, but there are other ways. What about his diet? What is he eating?
Mm-hmm.
Too much butterfat, for example.
Right, or too much MSG in his system.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot of things you would want to look at, particularly with someone that young.
So true. You know,
he's got a whole life ahead of him. And those drugs, once you're on them, the general procedure is you're on them for the rest of your life, and they have side effects.
Well, you know, and he said to me, you know, he says, Dad, I'm under a lot of stress. I'm working, I'm doing this and that. And I'm going, wait a minute, John, that's living. That's living. His name's Jonathan. I call him John. And I said, that's part of life. Part of living shouldn't give you high blood pressure. There's another cause for this. And so, you know, off we go. And we better take care of it now, because if he's 40 and finds out about this, then he's a goner. And that's not
what I want. Well, you know, my dad, Irv Robbins, the founder and owner of Baskin-Robbins, developed very high blood pressure, not at the age of your son, but very, very severe, and he was taking what he called horse pills, 10 of them every day, and experiencing the negative side effects of them, which are quite substantial. When he changed his diet, he always had exercise, but he began to eat more consciously, or substantially more consciously, mm-hmm. actually. What happened was these pills, which he had been told he'd have to take for the rest of his life, he no longer needed.
That's great.
And I must say, he's the guy who had always said there wasn't any connection between diet and health. And he found out in his own case that, fortunately for him, that there was a lot of benefit he could gain and did, in fact, gain.
You know, I knock the pharmaceutical industry because of their marketing techniques and because I think they sometimes create bigger problems than necessary. But there are some great medicines out there that have helped Americans and have helped people worldwide. But the secret is eventually to try to get off it.
Yes. You know, if you needed them, then they can be godsends. But they always carry some toxicity. There's always side effects. And not always are those side effects known. Some of them don't show up immediately. Some of them have to do with interactions with other drugs. And you know, I have a prejudice. I really do. I have a bias. I'll be frank about it. I try to use, and I try to help people use as little Western medicines as they can, not to shun them when they're helpful and needed. But I think that Western pharmaceutical companies have quite the vested interest in selling their products at a very high profit margin.
Well, absolutely. I was appalled, for example, at what Merck did by trying to lobby state legislatures to get this vaccine for little girls passed.
Oh, and making it mandatory.
Oh, my God. They finally backed off that. But, I mean, that's indicative of the problem we have here.
It is. And I think it also is indicative, George, of how each of us have to take responsibility for our health. Because if we take the mentality that we can just go along and do what everybody else does and, you know, buy food that's cheap and convenient and tasty and not care too much about it, and then if we have a problem, the doctor will be there to take care of it, I think we're walking into a chainsaw.
I read a story today where, you know, sadly, a woman died today of a heart attack. She weighed 841 pounds.
Yeah, well,
I mean, how is the heart going to function?
It can't.
No.
There's nothing in our evolution as a species that prepares us for that kind of weight. You know, it's totally dysfunctional at every level. And only in our society, where we have so many conveniences done for us, could a person even get near that weight and survive.
She had gone through that stomach shrinking surgery and came out of it, but died of a heart attack. We'll be back in a moment. John Robbins, our special guest, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is healthy at 100 with the number 100, healthyat100.org. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're winding down the free double CD offer, so if you've been thinking about getting it, now is the time. Simply subscribe to the After Dark newsletter and this double CD of Art's interviews with the late Catholic priest and exorcist, Father Malachi Martin, will be yours. The subscription begins with the March issue, so take advantage of it, the mysteries of EVPs. Call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. Back with John Robbins as we talk about Healthy at 100. So what's your favorite Baskin and Robbins ice cream, though, John?
Well, I haven't eaten it in so long that I don't think I have a favorite any longer.
Mine always was Daiquiri Ice.
Oh, I remember it well.
It was had a little nice little very pungent taste to it.
Yes, it was a good one. It was.
Okay.
But, I don't eat ice cream now, and people sometimes, raise an eyebrow at that, or they feel sorry for me or something, and I say, please don't. I ate enough ice cream in my childhood for 20 lifetimes.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I'm not deprived, But I've come to take very seriously the impact of my health, on my health, of the food I eat. And, out of respect for my life force, out of respect for the spirit within me and within all of us, I think we all should challenge the cultural beliefs and cultural ideologies that would take us in an unhealthy direction.
Did you ever have a health scare? Or
I did. I did. As a kid, I was very ill, actually, and that probably was one of the things that motivated me to take seriously. A lot of times people don't get serious about their health until they lose it. Then they realize what it's worth. And then they really regret the things they did that were flippant or, just disrespectful to their bodies. The body can take a lot of abuse, but then there's a point where it can't anymore. And I think if we can correct the problems that we're doing, the abuses that we're inflicting upon ourselves, before we reach that state, that's the mark of wisdom.
You know what I find fascinating, John, and I, like you, I start doing a lot of research into health issues because, when life goes so well for people, you don't want to screw it up by dying too early, you want to take care of yourself the best way you can. And, I've got a lot of responsibilities. You got families to take care of and things like that. You want to take care of yourself. What I find fascinating about this planet is that it seems that there are so many natural remedies to take care of things like hardening of the arteries and, diabetes. And again, I'm not saying anything bad about the medicines that help people, but this planet, and this is the question I'd like to ask you, this planet seems to produce the remedies for ailments that people end up having. How can that be? I mean, I believe in a divine creator, but my God, was he that good to create ways to cure you on the planet you live on?
Well, I think there are remedies for a lot of the problems, but the primary remedy is not to cause the problem in the first place. And a lot of the problems that we're experiencing in our bodies and in our communities and our families stem from the unnatural way we're living, the disrespectful way we're living. And by disrespectful, I mean disrespectful to ourselves, to each other, to the web of life on this planet. We are abusing this earth. And the native people of this land had a deep respect, a great, great reverence, really, for life and for this earth and for the healing remedies that it provides and for the bounty that it provides if we live in harmony with it. And I think that if the measure of a society, if the measure of a civilization is how it treats the earth, then our culture has a great deal to be reckoned with, because I think we have and are inflicting terrible, terrible damage on the earth and on the other species with which we share this earth and on which we depend for the interconnected health of the planet. The extinction of species, the increase is happening today at a rate that is frightening. Meanwhile, it's becoming well known now that the global warming phenomena, the climate is being destabilized by our pollution in the atmosphere and our consumption of and burning fossil fuels. And so many ways that we've gotten out of phase with our own health, our own nature. And so the revolution that's needed in our thinking, in our spirits, in our lifestyles, has to come from a very deep place inside us.
The name of your book, of course, Healthy at 100. Ironically, today, Ernest Gallo of the wine fortune dies at the age of 98. Probably had a glass of red wine, you know?
Well, I hope he did. I hope he did. You know, a glass of red wine's not a bad thing. And in Healthy at 100, the book that I wrote, I talk about the world's healthiest cultures, where people live to be very old ages in a very healthy way. And they all partake of moderate amounts of alcoholic beverages. They all are celebrants. They enjoy life. They're not prudes. But at the same time, they don't have any concept of alcoholism. To them, the idea of drinking to the point that you become insensitive to other people, that you become oblivious to your impact on other people, that would be a shameful thing to them. They wouldn't be motivated in that way. In fact, they would actually stigmatize someone who did that. These cultures that I write about in Healthy at 100, they appreciate alcohol in moderation because they use it to in ritualized ways. They use it to appreciate one another and enjoy life.
Do you believe it's possible? You know, if a person's heart continues to beat and they don't come down with some kind of cancer or ailment that, you know, disrupts their organs, theoretically, John, how long can a human being last? I mean, could they, if they take care of themselves and with all the modern remedies we're coming up with and natural things that we can do, I mean, is it possible you can go to 150, 200 years old?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, modern science would say we don't know what's possible, because the oldest authenticated, fully credible human being is 122. However, that doesn't mean that someone didn't live longer than that, or possibly even a lot longer than that.
Well, and I would guess that
outside
person,
of the studying of Western science.
But the person who lived to 122, I'm going to guess that person took care of themselves, but I don't think they knew, for example, that you could take certain, you know, natural ingredients to, you know, disrupt plaque in your arteries or anything.
No,
like
they
that.
Didn't. And in fact, they were a very primitive society.
Yeah. So if that person understood that, natural remedies, God knows how long they would have gone.
Well, you know, George, what I think is that as we tap into our divine intuition, as we tap into the guiding forces of our spirits, that I don't think we have even a clue how long we can live, how great we can be, how illumined our lives can be. We're like light bulbs that haven't been plugged in yet, compared to the potential that's there within our hearts and souls. But there are so many ways in which we betray that potential. There's so many ways in which we compromise and, you know, die the death of a thousand cuts, and don't become the kind of people that really it's in us to be. And so we don't find out how long we could live. We don't find out how well we could live. We don't find out how beautiful we are. We instead kind of buy into this cultural ideology that pushes us down.
How do you compare the diets of Americans to other regions on this planet?
Well, we eat more calories, you know, and than the healthier places on Earth. In fact, the cultures I talk about in Healthy at 100 eat what, by our standards, you would call a low-calorie diet, although I hesitate to call it that because I think by their standards, we're eating a high-calorie diet, and they're the healthier ones, so I think we ought to use them as the reference. And we're the ones with the bulging waistlines, and we're the ones with the obesity-related disorders, and we're the ones who aren't feeling very good because we're weighed down by the excess baggage we're carrying around on every level. And so that's one of the notable things about their diets, is they eat less fewer calories, but they get more nutrients because their calories are filled with nutrients. They don't eat junk food. They don't eat anything equivalent to our high fructose corn syrup or our hydrogenated right. fats. They're eating quality foods, natural foods, unprocessed foods. And so every calorie counts. I mean, I tell people you don't have to count calories if you make every calorie count, because then your cells won't be hungry, starving for nutrients. We eat a lot of the calories, but we don't eat the nutrients. You know, and I have to say that my dad and uncle's company, Baskin-Robbins, along with the other ice cream companies, along with the other sugar producers and companies that sell high sugar foods, have played a role in the fattening of the American, you know, bodies. And it's up to each of us. This is what I keep coming back to, George. I really believe it's up to each of us to take a stand for our lives, to take a stand for what we love, for our caring for ourselves.
And it doesn't mean you have to give up having fun or enjoying
Absolutely
yourself.
Absolutely not. In fact, you can't. If you give up having fun, you won't stay with it, and you won't be worth anything anyway.
Right, right. You can go to a restaurant, enjoy yourself, and eat well.
Yes, and not overeat. You don't have to have a second dessert. You don't even have to have any dessert.
Worst feeling in the world, John, is feeling stuffed when you leave a restaurant.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the way I'd like to leave a restaurant is still hungry. Because yeah, well, to me, that's the way to be.
Well, I like to live, actually. I'm glad you mentioned that. I actually like to live with a little feeling of hunger because it keeps me alive. You know, it keeps my ambitions intact, my drive. You know, the idea of being fat and complacent and smug, there's something about the American vision that's been lost. The power of the enterprise of ourselves has been lost as we've become more complacent.
I think you have more energy when you're a little hungry.
I am. And I'm no fan of poverty. I'm not in favor of anybody starving. All of our basic needs need to be met and should be met. But at the same time, we've made excess into a religion.
So when you started thinking about this, you decided to write Healthy 100. Why?
Well, I've been writing books about health and for many years now, and some of them have been bestsellers. What occasioned me or motivated me to write this book was seeing people age in different ways. What is it that makes one person at 65 already depressed, debilitated, and defeated, and someone else at the age of 90 is still alert and vibrant and connected with other people and engaged and contributing?
Yes, his mind is functioning. Some of yes. them still work, or they do some kind of work.
Yeah, they're involved.
Yes.
You know, they're into it. They're into life. And I you know, the phrase into it, and it also means intuit, to have an intuition about things, to be alive, sensing, feeling, connected to the powers within yourself. And within the greater human psyche, to be alive with that and in touch and in alignment with the goodness there, that's very powerful. But so I was wondering, why is it that some people just go on a downward spiral pretty early, whereas other people, as they get older, there's more and more beauty in their lives and more gifts? And that's what I wanted to look at, that question, and I started to study the cultures worldwide where healthy aging is the norm, where people don't get heart disease, don't get cancer, or very rarely.
Heck, I ran into a guy this weekend, Saturday night. He must have been 65, looked 42. And, you know, he was betting people to guess how old he was.
Yeah.
And, you know, pulled out his driver's license, and, you know, he's in his 60s.
Yeah.
And you know what? I could take him to a carnival and I'd win stuffed animals.
Yeah.
Because they'd never guess his age.
Yeah. Well, and it's he's fortunate, but he's also made some good choices.
Yeah, he
you know,
had to.
Sometimes people say, well, it's genetics, you know, it's roulette. You
well,
know,
that helps a little bit maybe, right?
It helps, but, you know, you play the cards you're dealt. You can play them well, you can play them poorly. And, you know, a good card player can win with poor cards.
What surprised you the most when you were putting together the work for the book, Healthy at 100?
I think what surprised me the most was the importance of love in people's health.
Explain that.
Well, you know, we know that high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or being overweight, these measurable things, you know, we know that smoking, we know these things hurt people. But I hadn't realized the extent to which loneliness hurts people. Being disconnected from other people, being disrespected, being in relationships where you feel undermined or put down or, you know, dissed in different ways. That really takes a toll, not just on your self-esteem or your emotional well-being, but we know now it takes a toll on the functioning of your respiratory system, the functioning of your cardiovascular system, the functioning of your immune system. It really does depress these systems. And chronic loneliness kills people, and it kills them as surely as smoking does. And by the same token, though, good relationships, relationships in which you feel that who you are and what you're doing and what you care about and the way you express yourself makes a difference to other people, where you feel that, that your heart matters to them and their hearts matter to you. You're in that kind of bonding. Uphold the functioning of the body. We make us healthy.
Kind of funny you say that because, you know, we make it really a tradition here on this program that if a work day falls on a holiday and we don't have prior scheduled vacations, we will do the show live. Now, not a lot of talk show hosts will do that. And one of the main reasons we do this, John, is because all across this country, there are people who are by themselves.
Yes.
It's just a fact of life.
Yes.
The radio in this program has become their family. And especially on a holiday like Thanksgiving or Christmas or New Year's Day. And so we do a show live, and they know it, they understand it, they appreciate it. But it's exactly what you've just said. When that loneliness is fulfilled and taken care of, it's unbelievable what it does to somebody's health and psyche.
It's true. And having somebody that you can talk to about your problems, someone who can understand the way you think, maybe outside the boxes a little bit of conventional straitjacket thinking, that kind of openness says something to the cells of the body. It says live. It says gives permission for health and vitality. It gives permission for the person to be who they are and not to just have to put on a mask and pretend all the time. And that kind of genuineness is worth its weight in gold. I appreciate that you do the show on holidays in that way. I appreciate that you are honoring your commitment to be there for people because I'm sure it's received.
Yeah, I think so. And just the feedback we get, I think it's important.
And that's a good feeling.
Yeah, you know, even if we touch one person, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
It really does. You know, you could have, we're coming up to the top of the hour, so we'll come back and chat a little bit. But, you know, you could have been living in a 20-room house, but you spent 10 years living in a one-room log cabin.
Yeah, that I built myself. Well, you know, I did that. That's when I left Baskin-Robbins and moved away. I walked away from the fortune. I told my dad I didn't want to have a trust fund. I didn't want to have an inheritance. I just wanted to live by my own values.
Do you really think he's cut you out of the will? I mean, I don't want to get too personal here, but...
Well, I've gone this far without depending on or receiving money from him.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But you get along with him?
Better, I think, now than ever. There's things we don't talk about. I wouldn't call us real close. But there has been a lot of rapprochement. There's been a lot of reconciliation. One thing is neither of us are trying to change the other guy anymore.
Right.
And that's worth a lot. I know he's not going to change. And he knows I'm not going to. So we are ourselves. And you know, we are on different paths. And I did disappoint him grievously at one point. I mean, I'm his only son, and he had worked very, very hard, and he had achieved a level of financial success most people can only dream about, and he wanted to share that with me. And I walked away from that, and I know that hurt him, and I'm very sorry about that.
Yeah, but how does he feel now when he sees a book on his table with your name on it?
Proud.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. And as we both know, John, financial success does not make happiness.
By itself.
Nope. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. John Robbins, our guest on Coast to Coast AM.